Are you getting out the milk?
Nope.
What are you getting?
Ta-da, ta-da, ta-da.
You know that for school? Put it in your lunch. Not for breakfast. Come and
no,
have.
Not.
Come and have.
I'll get the milk out.
Get the milk out. Okay. Just too early.
What? Who is?
He's calling the doctor because I'm. Do I tell her that I'm going to the doctor because I can feel a massive lump on the right-hand side of my uterus?
Good, good, good.
Are you still dizzy, Mummy?
A little bit.
When you're a prison wife, there are no safety nets.
Almost can't be bothered to go to the doctors, but I think I probably should.
Yeah, you should.
You can't afford illness. If you go down, everything goes down. Prison Bag, Episode 9. I'm fine.
Dear Mum, I'm sorry. I know I promised to be good and I swear I've been trying to hold it down, but see this place just ain't for me.
It's funny because I think my mum can speak English, but my mum doesn't believe that she can speak English properly, like well enough to kind of speak on all of our behalf and stuff. And I feel like that's why I have to take responsibility, because my mum, yeah, she can talk on our behalf, but me being in prison, she didn't have that support. She needs our help. Like, as a family, we've always been a unit coming together. All the kids are having fun today.
When Brenda was put inside, the family safety net vanished overnight. And soon after, her little sister was excluded from school and placed in a pupil referral unit, or centre.
What was it behind? Britain Behind Bars, and they showed Downview, and we got emotional because she's obviously seen the inside of the prison where she came to see me for the first time. She didn't get to see that. She just saw the visiting hall, and then she just went, I'm not being funny, but it kind of just reminds me of centre, like how everyone's acting, trying to be the baddest and
loudest, baddest. You gotta, like, don't smile too much. Like, smiling shows just soft, isn't it? Like, you know, they're going to be bad, I'm going to be better because I can't be getting picked up.
And this is the thing, because
even though, like, obviously, I was little, like, you was, when you went prison, you was, like, my age, like, older, yeah. Like, big or grown up. I was, like, a kid.
Yeah.
Everyone swears and smokes and is loud and is gobby. And obviously, I was already loud and gobby in school and a bit aggressive.
Now they've put me here,
and now I'm, like, like, F this. I ain't going to get picked on, dragged around by these people. There's all boys here. I'm not laughing at me and that yeah. Getting the mick taken out of me. Like,
that's her experience of centre. She can easily just say, oh, no, that was prison for me.
Did you feel guilty when you ended up going to prison and then your sister ended up going to centre?
Yeah. I mean, to be honest, I have always been my sister's keepers, especially my two little sisters. Like, I've always been the one that looks out for them. Like, so I was actually upset that she went to centre because I found out when I was in prison. In that aspect, I feel like, yeah, I do take responsibility for her being away, because in a way she was also going through kind of exactly what I was going through, but in a different environment, in a different building, you know?
And so young. You're just a child.
Yeah. It's really crazy, though, because even with young offenders, like, they're still young people until they offend. Then they're young offenders. Like, what is that?
I just want to get out of this hellhole that they tried to disguise as a centre. Did you notice I said white British? I just realised that I was different.
Me going to prison was fighting because my older sister was attacked in a nightclub. But I think it was sitting in the cells. Like, when I realised that I could possibly go to prison, I think that's when I lost my mind completely. And I think it's only now that I've begun to, like, get my mind back a couple of years later.
So when people think that prison is... Because I think, you know, imagine that people are in prison, they're getting some help, they're getting some therapy, they're being rehabilitated, they're being made into better people.
I don't even know what that is. I don't know. I didn't go to that prison, and I went to Holloway, I went to Morton Hall, I went to Peterborough for a night and ended my sentence in Downview, and I didn't see that.
What, you know, what's prison doing?
I think that prison is slowly killing people mentally and emotionally. there is no rehabilitation in prison. I'll be honest. Yes, there's courses now. There's a few things that you can do. Like, now I'll go and do stuff in prisons and stuff. But that's because I've been through it. Prison didn't say, Brenda, you're now going to be a poet. Brenda, you're now going to go and help other ex-offenders. Prison made me realise that there's so many people here, broken, hurt, abused, and all of them vulnerable in so many different ways. But yet we're all put in this situation, in this environment, where all those emotions, if you're not careful, will be forced to come right out to the surface. And how you deal with that is going to affect the whole prison. The whole prison, not just you. You know, if someone self-harms, we all get put down and shut down. If someone has a fight, we all get put on shut down. Back when I first was in prison and I started hearing about suicide and all this stuff, I really thought people were really selfish to go and try to kill themselves and then we all get locked up. I thought they were selfish, but I get it. I get it. I really do, because the longer I spent that time in that cell, it seemed a lot easier. It seemed like a great option. Like, who wants to be here? This is not on a holiday camp. And I just thought, what? All this stuff when people talk about prison is not hard, prison. I don't know what they're talking about. It must be made of stone. And like iron, they must be literally made of iron, because I kid you not, just having that first night, I really decided in my life that I was going to be a hard knock here. I'm going to be bad. I'm going to do this. When I get to prison, I'm not nobody. And I swear to you, within about an hour, I realised I'm not even bad. Like, I was like, I'm probably going to die here. This is where I die. You know, I remember saying to my sister and my best friend, just so you know, I don't want you to come back. I won't be here. I don't know how I'm going to do it. I don't know how I'm going to leave this place. But even if it means that I have to die, I'll definitely be leaving this place.
Mum, I swear they're trying to kill me. Remember I told you on the weekends we might as well starve. See, we get breakfast in the morning. Well, that's what they call it. It's one boiled egg, 10 tomatoes, 5 chips. You dropped one and you're pissed. And we can't even take food back to our rooms. I'm in cell, sorry, I'm still trying to get used to the word cell. I feel like I'm wasting away, mum. I'm fighting to make it through, but freedom of speech just don't apply here. I made a comment about the food and how the portions could be better. You never believe what the officer replied when he heard. I'm flipping tired. I'm flipping tired.
My family is definitely disintegrating too. And so it seems is my body. I'm hoping the doctor will say that I'm imagining things. Lump, no, you're fine. But she doesn't. She takes blood, just to rule out anything nasty. But then she calls me herself the following day. Never a good sign. I have a raised blood marker for ovarian cancer. Historically, I'm not a big panicker, but ovarian cancer? I can't get anything that major for at least another 3 years. I wonder whether to tell Rob. I worry about worrying him. How can you drop a bombshell like this on someone you love, knowing that they'll be lying awake, unravelling at night, feeling more captive and useless than ever? But I decide that I have to tell him. In a series of broken 10-minute, 2-second phone calls, we discuss many things, including what will happen to the kids if my checkout date precedes his. It's dramatic, but necessary.
It was journeys that I had to take through all of that, through discovering me, through praying, through finding that faith, that 12-year-old girl, that 11-year-old girl that was in church and decided she'll write Sunday school songs and be in the choir. I had to find that person in order for this person to stay alive. And
a lot of people don't, do they? Someone kills themselves in a British jail every 3 days.
And this is what makes it so painful. You have to be in that situation to understand that you cannot truly understand suicide and how easy it is for you to feel that death is an easier option until you go to prison.
It breaks my heart because you don't see the people that killed themselves in there. You don't see the people that are gibbering in the corner of a cell that are just broken by it.
But what's great, what you said, is that people see me now and they say, prison word, Brenda, look what Brenda's done. But they see Brenda now. They see Lady Unchained. Lady Unchained is the person I created to get myself out of that depression, to get myself off of the ground, to get unchained, actually officially off the ground and visible to other people. But no one saw me before that. You know, my family would go days without seeing me. When I finally come off tag, they would, like, I would be in a house because I had nowhere to go. I had no money. I'd lock myself in the house, turn the lights off. No one saw me. So even though I had everybody around, I still felt alone.
The day of the scan arrives. I'm terrified. My friend Laurel asks if I want her to come with me. I've managed this whole thing by myself, and I hate being needy. But for once, I say yes. The ultrasound lady heads straight to the ovaries. They are, thank heavens, perfect and unscathed. I could kiss her. The lump is nothing more menacing than a Satsuma-sized fibroid. I look at it affectionately on the same fuzzy black and white imaging where I first saw my babies and feel so very lucky. Rob calls and I tell him the good news. It's only the second time I've ever heard him weep.
Coming off license was just, I think in my head I believed that that would be the end, but it wasn't, because you're off license, you still got a criminal conviction, you still got to declare this, you still got to, you know, try and get a job. I remember a job that I nearly got was for a charity, and passed the first interview, got called in for a second interview. Third interview was a trial, like go into the, meet the young people, talk to them. I remember being told how difficult the young people in this house were and how many issues they had, just like what they said about my little sister, like, you know, her, what she's seen.
I got this, I got Shemmy.
I was like, this is nothing. Like, you want to give me challenging young people? I've got this. You know, that is something that I realised in prison, that I'll be able to do, work with young people, because young people need somebody that's been through some stuff, like, that has come out the other end. So I went there ready, and all the young boys were lovely. We had a great time. I was like, yeah, I'm a poet, like, I'm just starting up. And it went really well. I think I was meant to leave there at about 3 p.m, but I was there till like 5-6 o'clock, because I was having so much fun. And I remember when I was leaving, the boys said to, I remember them saying to the manager, you better make sure she comes back. And I felt good about it, but it turned out that I didn't get that job. Apparently the organisation didn't see all my convictions or whatnot, and it really broke my heart. Everyone sees the Brenda that I have fixed, the Brenda that I have built up, because if I was going to give up, I would have given up in prison. The times when, you know, I'm being told I'm not even British and I should go back to Africa and all this stuff, like, those are the times. Like, and had people known me then when I first come out, I don't think people would be doing interviews with me. I don't think they would even want to put me on a podcast, because I was angry. I was angry. I didn't want to be the black, angry girl that came out of jail and is angry because she went to prison because she committed a crime. That is straight away, people be like, well, you committed a crime, you do the time. What did you expect to happen? But had I been let that anger carry me, I don't think I'd be able to do what I'm doing now. And yes, now they have to be like, oh my God, she's amazing, she's doing great. But the time when I was out waving a white flag, no one saw me. No one saw me.
The morning after my scan, I'm cycling to a meeting. High, relieved, so happy to be well. Suddenly a woman steps out with her buggy and I panic. I slam on the brakes and catapult myself over the handlebars, landing hard on my cheek and somehow managing to crack the back of my head too. I black out briefly before scrambling out of the road and onto the pavement, where I sit on the curb. I put my head in my hands and sob. People are asking who they can call. I tell them that I'm fine and there isn't anyone I can call anyway. But it's not okay. I'm not fine. There are loads of people I could call, just not the one person I need right now.